Radio Ghana.
A very good evening to you and you're welcome to Behind the News, a program which examines issues from the perspective of newsmakers and experts. My name is Agatha Samwan. Tonight, police in Chifupras in the central region hold attacks by rampaging youth. Reports of an easy calm in the area, but how long will the peace last? NPP galvanizes support for General Secretary and Communications Team member following invitation by Supreme Court for contemptuous comments. What exactly is the party doing for the two gentlemen? We will find out shortly. And all eyes on Ghanaian youth as the world marks Youth Day. How do we channel their vibrant energy for productive activities? Join me in the next hour as we discuss these issues. You can also join the discussions via text on 0240971087, 0240971087. Behind the News is also live on Ubunu FM 96.5 in Tema, Radio Central 92.5 in Cape Coast, Trent City 94.7 in Takoradi, and in Kofodia is on Sunrise FM 106.7. Reports from Chifupras in the central region say calm has returned to the town following the attack on the town's police station by the youth over the deaths of two people in the Pra River. The youth had accused the police of allegedly shooting the deceased when they tried to escape from an operation on illegal mining along the banks of the Pra River last Saturday. Nine inmates were reported to have been set free in the attack on the police station. Meanwhile, five of them have been rearrested by the police. DSP Freeman Tete of the Police Public Affairs Directorate has joined me on the line to give us an update. Good evening, DSP, and you are welcome.
Good evening, my sister, and good evening, listeners of Unique FM.
Well, from the reports you have gathered, what is the current situation at Chifupras?
Our reports on the ground indicate that relative calm has returned to the area because we have a heavy police presence there. We have a detachment from the Western Regional Police Command as well as the Central Regional Police Command. So we have a strong presence there. So with this, the RegSec was also there this morning to commiserate with families. Families of the two men who got drowned in the Pra River as a result of the police operation. Beside that, they were also there to assess the situation. This evening, today, the Director General of Police Operation and the Regional Commander were also there to have first-hand information on the operation as well as the fallout of it. What is important is that the Inspector General of Police has called for immediate investigation into the entire operation to find out whether it was authorized or not and the cause of death, whether it was as a result of police bullets as being alleged by the people or it was they got drowned. And also, preparation is underway for the coroner's report to come out because it is important that a post-mortem is carried out. So that is exactly what the district police commander is doing because I just spoke with the district commander this evening and he told me that tomorrow morning they will be contacting the court for the coroner's form for the inquest to start.
So for now, we don't know what might have killed the two.
It's a matter that we are still investigating. According to a preliminary report from the local police, they went on an operation to flush out criminals from their hideout, and in the process, they chanced upon these illegal miners. And immediately they saw the police, people numbering about seven, dive into a nearby river, which is River Pra, where they were operating their illegal mining activities. So, in the course, two of them got drowned.
Well, as you said, there may be an easy calm now in the town, but where are the whereabouts of the four inmates of the nine who were set free during the attack on the police station?
Actually, point of correction, nine inmates were actually set free when the police station was attacked, and we've been able to recapture four of them. So five are currently at large. So that is the latest, and we are still looking for them. Where we are actually on their tail, and we are very hopeful that will get information leading to their arrest.
But then again, what initiatives have the police taken to patch up the differences between them and the people of Chifu Prasso?
We wouldn't say that there's a difficulty in terms of relationship. It's an operation that was carried out that led to all this. What is important is that the RegSec has met with the opinion leaders, all the stakeholders. The DISEC started the process before the RegSec came. That is the district security council and the regional security council, respectively. And we, on our part, the Central Regional Police Command has also initiated moves to patch up differences. And we believe the police administration, through the Director General Operation, was also there, as I said earlier on, to continue the effort by the various commands to ensure that there is relative peace in the area for normalcy to return.
So, for now, what are you telling the people of Chifu Prasso, especially with regard to the others who are at large?
What is important is that we want the law to be respected. We don't want people to take the law into their own hands, because even if they are very suspicious of the police, at the end of the day, the police are there to provide them with the needed security. So it is important that when things of that nature happen, when there's an assurance from the police administration that they will get to the bottom of it, it's a matter of exercising patience and waiting upon them for a thorough investigation. If not only is the police administration going to carry investigation into it, the Regional Security Council is also conducting its own separate and independent investigation into it. So we are still appealing. The IGP has personally appealed to the people to remain calm and ensure that the proper thing is done. And by proper thing, we are talking about investigation being carried out into it. At the end of the day, we will not shield our own. When they are culpable, they will be brought to book. It is important that we recognize that fact. And then those who are at large, we want public cooperation because they remain fugitive. They are people that are in lawful custody. So we want them to assist us to rearrest those people. But at the end of the day, they will pose security threat to the people of the area because they've committed various offenses.
Well, is the operation on illegal mining going to cease?
It's a District Security Council as well as a Regional Council decision. Because at the end of the day, we will do what the law allows us to do. Because whatever is criminal, we have to come on. But it must be properly done. It must be done properly by an authority, must act that it should be done. So these are special operations that the police don't just get up and do it. We act on an authority. So at the end of the day, we will not say, once it is illegal, the police will, and the other security agencies combined will come in after them. But for now, it's early for us to be talking about operation on illegal mining, because what is important is that we want calm to be restored, and we are very thankful to the people that at the end of the day, they've risen up, and then calm has returned to the area there. Now, men will continue to be on the ground as far as there's a need for them to be there.
All right. Many thanks for your time with us tonight.
Thank you.
DSP Freeman Tete is with the Police Public Affairs Directorate, and also joining us on the line is Samuel Atomwa, who is the MP for Chifu Etimokwa. Good evening, Ms. Samuel. You are welcome.
Thank you very much. Good evening.
Well, to what extent have you intervened to reduce the tension between the police and the people of Chifu Prasso?
Oh, thank you very much. I'm just going to take the opportunity to extend my greetings to the listeners of this program this evening. Really, when that thing happened, because it was Friday when the incident was reported to us concerning a shooting that some police have been involved in, having a rift of the small-scale miners within that community. But when that thing happened, instead of the police to go into it, maybe party of the community to take those drugs from the distance, too, they couldn't do that. So the people were charged, really very, very charged. The system was so polarized that I don't know how to describe it. So when that people came here, came to the police, when they got the dead body from the river, they took the dead body to the police cells, of which brought a whole lot of things. But for the intervention of the BC and myself, I think we've been able to calm the situation now. So what we've been able to do now is talking to the bereaved family, and they're affected that they are reposing a confidence in us that we are going to help, we are not going to show any wrongdoing concerning this killing. So we are going to do that, and that is the confidence that people have reposed on, and we are going to work on that. So based on that confidence, I think we are online.
We understand the Central Regional Security Council had a meeting with the people of Chukwu, the police and other stakeholders. Can you tell us the outcome of that meeting?
Yeah, that is the outcome. The outcome that it has calmed the situation, it has normalized the situation for us, because when the regional minister, including the regional commander, then the district commander, myself, you started going to this place, the two paramounts, that is Chukwu paramountcy and the Chukwu Etimukwa, who are owning the land now. So when we went there, we had a meeting with the two paramountcies, and even we had another meeting with the bereaved family at the National Assembly Hall. And even at that meeting, the Etimukwa Mahine was present at the meeting, of which I think we've spoken at length, and they have accepted that they are going to have their confidence waiting for the doctor's report.
But we are aware the youth in the area have been engaging in illegal mining for years now. What exactly have you been doing as an MP to deal with the challenge?
I don't know how to put it in the right context. But for here, as compared to other areas whereby the illegal mining is very huge, here it's not like that. It's about small ones of which people are doing here. Comparing whereby they are having the Chinese people mining at the place, no, for here, no. But what left here is these small miners who are operating along the river bound. And, we've been talking to them that because of the national task force, really it is no good that we have to embark or we have to help you to do that project. So we've been talking to them. I don't know, because of the national program, national task force, everybody here will even attest to the fact that really my people are not operating. I don't know how this thing even came about until this Friday. I got the information that really there has been a shooting incident concerning this same program. And really, even before this, I had the meeting, even at that time, I was not even having any position. I had a meeting with them that they should be very careful because what they are doing is illegal. And it doesn't conform with the constitution of the state, so they should be very careful with it. And I think we've been talking to them, organizing a program for them that they should be very careful, because at any time that they will be caught into this program, I think we are not going to spare them. So that is what we've been doing, especially having a program on the radio and a whole lot of things.
But then how can we avoid a similar situation in future?
This situation, I don't think it will occur depending on the intelligence work my people also embark, because this thing came up because of the shooting incident. If not the shooting incident, I think, and even the police will also be fair, if they will be fair to us. When they came, those charged people wanted to maybe vandalize the place, even go to know the system, because at that time we have went through. So I'm not expecting that this thing will even happen here anymore. And I'm saying as an MP that I'm going to also do my best, be on air, educating my people that they should desist from the illegal mining that they are operating on.
All right, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
Oh, thank you very much.
Samuel Atuamwa is the MP for Chukwu Etimukwa. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana in Accra. Behind the News is live on Twin City 94.7 in Takoradi, Garden City 92.1 in Kumasi, and Radio BAR 93.5 in Sunyain. Some supporters of the NPP are obviously not elated with the invitation extended by the Supreme Court to the General Secretary of the party, Kwejo Usuefuye, also known as John, and a member of the party's communications team, Hobson Adoy. Consequently, the supporters and groups within the party are preparing events in solidarity with the two gentlemen. The women's wing in Accra is reported to have asked women in the party, particularly those in our markets, to be in red and black attire or wear red armbands starting tomorrow in support of the two invited gentlemen. And in the Ashanti region, executives of the party in the region are also reported to be organizing a night vigil tomorrow to support their colleagues. In Accra this afternoon, the Young Patriots, a youth wing in the NPP, told the media that they are not enthused about the invitation and have, in a retaliatory measure, filed a series of recordings with the Registry of the Supreme Court about alleged contemptuous comments by some NDC personalities, and they want the Supreme Court to act on them as well. The segment is brought to you in collaboration with Star Ghana, funded by UKAID, USAID, Danida, and the European Union. And Richard Nyama is a spokesperson for the Young Patriots, and he's joined me on the line. Good evening, Richard, and you are welcome.
Thank you, Agatha, for having me.
Well, Richard, what exactly is your problem, if you can tell us?
Thank you very much. The problem is quite simple. Number one, Hoshin Adoye, who is the Director of Operations of the Young Patriots, said what he said on the directions of me as a leader of the group, and as a result of a press statement that I had released, reacting to what Gabby Asumi of the NDC had said, that if any ruling was to be in the favor of the opposition leader, Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo, there will be civil war. We took it quite serious. So a statement was issued calling on the Peace Council to give us their position on that. And also to note that if they did not react to that statement and other statements that were going on, they should not react to the Young Patriots if we decided to reply. And so I think the Peace Council, I remember, emphatically put out a statement denouncing that statement and condemning any other communicator speaking in like manner. Hoshin Adoye was called to react to this statement, and he did in like manner, and saying that if the NDC dare disobey the Supreme Court ruling in case it went in our favor, we'll do ABC. Both statements in bad light. They took place before the Supreme Court ruled that if anyone calls the red line ABCD, it would happen. So if Hoshin Adoye is being called, we expect Gabby Asumi to be called. That aside, Sir John, could you also see the General Secretary of the MPP? He has been called on contempt charges. We are not contesting that. He will go and put up his own defense. But point is this. Sir John made the statements he made on 25th of June, the same day Ali Dawood, a member of the NDC and host of Majority Caucus of Multi TV, went on air at about 6:30 p.m. and declaring that the Supreme Court cannot rule in favor of Nana and that they should take it, or all viewers and Ghanaians should take it from him, that it wouldn't happen in 2013, it won't happen ever. It is there. It's a video. Now, Sir John, a couple of hours later, goes on Oman and speaks, and his is heard and seen. But that which occurred earlier is not heard. So we decided that, look, we'll put all this evidence before the Supreme Court. Apart from that of Dawood, the president has been speaking. Any single opportunity, whether he's commissioning a borehole or a road or a school, he will talk about the case in the Supreme Court and how it will go in his favor. That is contempt in one way or the other. It doesn't matter if he's the president. And let me remind listeners that the presiding judge had occasion to warn the president for his comments. Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo is the one who took the case to the court. We have never heard him, nor Jake Obawumia, speak outside the court on this matter. Why should the president continue to do what he does? If Nana Akufo-Addo goes on and declares that the Supreme Court will declare for him, and then the president says that he will declare for him, what we'll be doing is that we'll have two belligerent positions, those for Nana and those for President Mahama. At the end of the day, this country would be heading in a way we don't want it to go. So we want the president to also stop. And so we are bringing also that aspect to the notice of the court. So what we've done is that Oula Mangote, Ali Dawu, the president, and Atubiga, the gentleman who was jailed for 4 days and who has been claiming he has seen the light and is preaching peace and wants a peace march, just last Friday, was cursing the Supreme Court for injustice and threatening to sue them and to take them to the UN. Probably they didn't hear that. So we have put that one as well together, and we have gone to put it before them at the Supreme Court.
So
they should take judicial notice of it.
So who received your petition?
The registrar had a representative who took our petition, took the evidence, and then assured us that it would be delivered to the appropriate quarters. And so we expect that that will be done. But lastly, let me do mention that Sir John, the General Secretary of the MPP, has done something that is unheard of, which has gone to help the case in the Supreme Court, which is he put out guidelines on how MPP communicators should go on to communicate this matter whilst it's ongoing at the Supreme Court. Apparently, the Ghanaian media houses that had copies of this adopted that as their guidelines as well. And so I'm sure the GBC probably has a copy. And when I know media houses that when you go and you start speaking outside what Sir John has put out, you are stopped from talking. So it has helped to sanitize the airwaves. In any case, he has even gone beyond that to go around. And I have personally been with him to regions and constituencies where he tells them that, look, if we did not have faith in the Supreme Court, we will not bring our case before them. So we will take whatever they say and as the verdict and we'll move with it. And in Connecticut just last week, he said that if the MPP loses this case, we'll reorganize and come back in 2016. That is the mark of someone who shows that he will respect whatever decision the Supreme Court takes. And we also further think that he has purged himself of any contempt if he has contempted himself before the Supreme Court.
But Richard, if they have all these guidelines there, why would they then be reacting to some of the comments that these NDC commentators are making out there?
Who would be reacting?
The NPP.
I don't know who in NPP, after Sir John put out that statement, has reacted. All the people we took to the Supreme Court are all NDC people who have been talking since Sir John put the guidelines out. Not a single NPP person, unless you can cite someone for me.
And with regard to the petition you submitted to the registry today, have you got the assurance that your complaints will be submitted to the justices?
That is exactly what they told us.
Well, hold the line for me. But then, Abraham Amaliba is a member of the NDC legal team, and we have him on the line. Good evening, Mr. Amaliba, and you are welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the young patriots believe there are several comments from the NDC and indeed some men from the president which are contemptuous but have not been invited by the Supreme Court. Do you agree?
I vehemently disagree with Richard Nyama on this matter. I am sure they are making reference to the president's statement when he visited the chief imam. And what did he say? He said he has done nothing wrong in respect of the 2012 election and that he will be vindicated. The truth shall prevail. Compare this statement to Sir John's attack, rhetoric attack on the person of the president of the panel. You can't compare the two. One person is saying that he believes in his cause in court, and that's why he's in court. If he didn't believe in what he believes in, he would have packed bag and baggage and left the Flagstaff House and called Akufo-Addo to come and sit there. He's just reiterating his answer to the Supreme Court when he was summoned to the Supreme Court. Why? The president was just re-echoing what their own star witness said in the witness box, that President John Dramani Mahama has done nothing wrong. Didn't that statement come from their own star witness? So, what is contempt? contempt about that statement. Indeed, when we are talking about contemptuous statements, it began from the MPP. We could all recollect that when they filed a petition, the next moment they were all over, television cameras thrown at them, and they were discussing pink shoot. That was the first time the Ghanaian saw what pink shoot are. Is that not contempt of court? You file a matter, then immediately you go to the court of public opinion and be discussing it. The young Petros have no capacity to even bring this matter to the Supreme Court. They are not a party to it. They cannot evoke the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court on this matter. So by filing a petition, it's a wrong move, it's a wrong approach. I don't know which lawyer advised them, but I think that they have no capacity to evoke the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court in this matter. In their own news conference, I like to quote Reginyama, the court must be seen to be fair to all sides of the political divide in its application of the law on contempt of court. Is he suggesting that the court is not fair? These were the same comments made by Asami Awuku, and that landed him in trouble. I wouldn't mention Ken Crunchy, who also repeated the same thing and landed him in trouble. He's there in the Supreme Court. You see, what I see that these young Petros are doing is that they are trying to provoke the Supreme Court. When the Supreme Court takes a decision on them and takes a stand on them, then they will have cause to complain and say that the Supreme Court was not fair to them. But I think that the good people of Ghana are watching.
But Mr. Maliba, if I understand you, I understand your argument, but if the Supreme Court wants all sides to stay out of bounds of the court's hearing in terms of comments, was it necessary for the president to pass a comment on the case, whether harmful or harmless?
The president is the president of this country. He has indicated that he would abide by the Supreme Court ruling. Don't forget the platform or the forum in which he found himself. He found himself in the forum of chief imams from all the regions. And you would agree with me that well-meaning Ghanaians have called on the two protagonists, the president and Nana Akufo-Addo, to accept the results. Some of these calls came from the religious leaders. He's found himself in the company of religious leaders. Is it not proper and appropriate for him to assure them that their calls have been heeded to, and on his part, he would abide by the Supreme Court ruling? But he has indicated that, as far as he is concerned, he has done nothing wrong. How is that contemptuous of the court? I think that they are overstretching it. What they should be doing for me, which some of my colleagues in the legal team have done, and I can mention Chris Akume, is to plead for leniency. But this buga-buga type of thing, always massing up at anywhere that they find themselves in trouble, attacking state institutions, they've now sent it to the Supreme Court.
All right, Mr. Maliba, hold the line for me. Let me go back to Richard. You heard lawyer Maliba that he says you are not a party to the case at the Supreme Court, so you don't have the authority to file those complaints.
My brother Abraham, I don't know where he's coming from. And I was with him on another network where he's threatening to cite us for contempt. He is a lawyer, and I expect that he was very clearly aware of what the presiding judge said about contempt in terms of writing to the court. He said anyone writing to them on the matter before the court, and is the court deciding on who is in contempt of it or not? That is not the matter there. They are not discussing issues of contempt. They are discussing who won the elections or not. So please, he can go and make a laughing stock of himself tomorrow if he chooses to go that line. But you know what? The point is this. The issue before the Supreme Court, the President of the Republic of Ghana has lawyers. And I remember Mr. Abraham Maliba extolling the virtues, the capacity, the legal remuneration of lawyer Chachichikata. Is he telling us that the president has no confidence in Chachichikata's abilities to make his case in court, that he has to resort to the court of public opinion to make his case? Please, you have two people who are in court with their issue. Nanado Dankwa Akufo-Addo, Dr. Bawumia and Jake Obechebilamte, I can swear on my life, have never spoken outside the court on this matter. Why is it that the president at every single opportunity will be telling the court how innocent he is? It means he either has no faith in Mr. Amaleba and Chachichikata, or he has no faith in the verdict, and so he's trying to appeal to the public. And we are saying this kind of propaganda will not wash. In any case, there is this attempt now by the late NDC legal team to say that in the first place, the president cannot be cited for contempt per the laws of this country. In that, you know what? I am reminding them of what the presiding judge said. The presiding judge had occasion to warn the president of the Republic of Ghana that he himself will not be spared if he continues to make contentious statements of the court. And so we are only bringing it to their notice. We only went there to put it to them that some people are also talking and talking out of tune. And if the NDC newspapers, the Daily Post and the Enquirer that have been doing it didn't see the need, we have seen the need to bring it before them. That is it. Finito.
All right, Richard, we want to thank you for your time with us.
You're welcome.
Richard Nyama is a spokesperson for the Young Patriots. Back to you, Lawyer Maliba.
Yes.
You heard Richard there. What is your response?
There's much I do about nothing. The Supreme Court did not say that people should hold press conferences and notify them of contemptuous statements. So if they thought that that was the modus operandi to get people cited for contempt, I'm sorry. It should be reminded that the Supreme Court made a point that people are writing letters to the Supreme Court asking for certain things to be done, and that those persons should know that, indeed, that amounts to contempt of court. So if he is not a party to a matter, and he is leading a group of people to petition the Supreme Court when he's not a party in this matter, you should be careful about it. The Supreme Court indicated that everybody was equal before the law. And that was what he meant by the president and anybody in this country. He never singled out the president to warn. That must be made clear. When they filed their petition and they held that their press conference, Nana Akufo-Addo, Jake Obechebilamte were there to give Dr. Mahmoud Bawumia moral support for him to take journalists to explain to journalists how the pink sheet is looked into. Did Nana Akufo-Addo caution Bawumia or tell him not to hold that press conference? So to say that the president has been saying that he has not done anything wrong, that is contemptuous, of course. What did Nana Akufo-Addo do when Bawumia was the lead person who was taking the whole group and journalists into the pink sheet? I think that these are the things that we are talking about. They are preparing the grounds once again to make this country ungovernable. And I think well-meaning Ghanaians should focus their attention on the Young Patriots.
All right, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Abraham Amaleba is a member of the NDC legal team. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana in Accra. All that segment was brought to you in collaboration with Star Ghana. It's Behind the News. We're also live on Yura Radio 89.5 in Bogotanga, Volta Star 91.1 and 91.3 in Ho, and Radio Savannah 91.2 in Tamale. Any society that does not succeed in tapping into the energy and creativity of its youth will be left behind. A quote from Kofi Annan, former UN boss, as the world observes Youth Day today. The day comes at a critical period like this when Ghana, everybody's attention has been transfixed on an election petition to decide who really leads their country as the number one person on the land. For many, the youth should be carefully watched because of their vulnerability and the propensity of politicians to exploit their raw strength to tear the country apart. Kofi Annan's admonition, therefore, could not have come at a better time, particularly as we gradually inch towards a determination of the election petition. Government led by the Youth Ministry has an onerous task at this very critical moment to whip the country's youth into line. But how does it do so? So we know the youth have their minds and energy set on something useful now and beyond. Let's first speak to Deputy Youth and Sports Minister Joseph Yamin on these and other issues confronting the youth. Good evening, Mr. Yamin, and you're welcome.
Good evening, Agatha.
Well, how did you mark World Youth Day?
Well, thank you very much. Let me say a very good evening to your listeners. We mark the day with a forum that brought together youth from all over the country. I mean, reps coming from all the regions in the country, as well as youth groups, and to meet with the president at the Flagstaff House, and an interactive, you call it a dialogue, between the youth and the presidency. So the youth had the opportunity to tell the president, the presidency, what is on their mind, what they think that it needs to be done to the youth, to develop the youth and develop the country. And the president also gave assurances to the youth. And one of the assurances that was given to the youth was the fulfillment of a manifesto promise in the 2012 manifesto, where His Excellency John Dramani Mahama pledged the people of this country that when he is elected as president, which he is now, he is going to set up a youth fund. I mean, call it the entrepreneurial fund, which will be assessed for youth that wants to develop their own talent, that wants to go into entrepreneurship. Aside the NYEP, which is now JIDA, to help employ and give skills to the youth. He made it clear today when he met the youth at the Flagstaff House that the $10 million fund that was promised in the manifesto has come to fruition. The finance minister has set aside the $10 million Ghana City fund, which no time he will be, outdooring the fund so that it could start implementation and people could start assessing it.
Well, now we all know what is before us as a nation, and we know that any trouble in the country has a huge role being played by the youth, and indeed they are seen as the stronger section of the society because of their youthfulness. But how is the ministry engaging them now and beyond to prevent any trouble?
Well, of course, where we have troubles and where the youth have no future in society. I mean, yes, you clearly said it, that wherever there is violence, is the youth that is used in implementing violence. And the same way, wherever there is development, is this same youth that are used in developing the nation or the community that is to talk about. And so if you give the assurance to the youth, if the youth get to find out that there's a bright future, their lives are going to be better off, it's an indication that they will be living the same way as their people are living. I'm not sure any youth will want to destroy such future. And if you are able to give such assurance to the youth, it will deter them from entering into any venture that will forestall whatever progress that the country is making. And so the government and the ministry, headed by Honorable Ezefri Yankra, wants to assure the youth. Currently under our ministry, you know, the ministry has two departments, that is the sports and the youth. And these two sectors go hand in hand. When you are developing the youth, you are developing sports. And when you are developing sports, the same way you are developing the youth. And so in the terms of sporting, in the sporting arena, the government is seeking to develop the infrastructure of the sport, so that whoever has a talent in whatever field will have what it takes to develop its talent. And mind you, every sportsman aiming higher. If you're a footballer, you want to play at the highest level, play at the World Cup. If you're a tennis player, you want to go as far as the Davis Cup. If you're a basketball player, you know where you are going to. If you're an athlete, you want to compete in the Olympics. And so if you have all these facilities and young men and women with these talents, I'm not sure they want to jeopardize it for anything else, but want to have this and also aim to be like Usain Bolt, to be like David Pelis and be like others. In terms of the youth, if the youth have the confidence in the economy, that indeed there's a fund there, that after school I may not be seeking for a job, I will have the facility on my own, develop the skills that I have to be able to train people, to be able to employ people, to be a boss of my own. I'm not sure the youth will want to travel outside this country and just be homeless somewhere and be going through the trauma. And so if you are able to assure the youth in this angle, I'm sure it will stop them from engaging in anything that will be jeopardizing the peace, jeopardizing the progress the country is enjoying as of now.
All right, I want to thank you for your time with us tonight.
You're welcome.
Joseph Yamin is Deputy Youth and Sports Minister. And joining us also on the line is Dr. Theo Richardson, who is an economist and social policy analyst. Good evening, Doc, and you're welcome.
Good evening.
Doc, there are some analysts who think the state does not have any policy which can positively harness the potential of the teeming youth. Do you think we have such a policy in state?
Good evening to cherished listeners. I think this is a very important topic, more so in light of the fact that it's been linked to the important subject of migration. Okay, and where the youth or a people from one country move to is determined by the economic circumstances in the country, basically, what we call the push factors. And so the overall economic or socioeconomic conditions in the country will partly be determined by what goes into whatever we call the youth policy. And I think youth policy is a very broad, I think, terrain, very broad area, comprising a whole gamut of issues, including issues relating to citizenship, education and training, employment, skills and employment development, you know, and a sense of national identity and patriotism. So we do have here economic issues, we do have here social policy issues, and we do have even political issues, how the youth or the individual identifies with the political system, and how the individual and why he is or she is prepared to die for the nation state. These are all broad areas. Where I will start from is that the youth, I don't know what age group consider youth, but I suppose between 15 and 35, and I suspect that given the population of Ghana, the 22 or so million population of Ghana, I think the youth constitutes quite a significant proportion. I suspect about 35% at least. And what we have seen over the years is that there has been huge migration, you know, out-migration, you know, of the youth out of this country. If we take the statistics, those who are traveling abroad to study are the youth. Those who are traveling abroad for green passes are the youth. We did see in the late 1970s, you know, that it was the youth, including our young lecturers and medical doctors, as well as, of course, some of the, not the old ones, but above 45, you know, professionals who traveled out of the country. Uh-huh. And it has implications for the country. So, yes, there seems to be there's a sense of the absence of a coherent and cohesive youth policy in the country, more so following the that was sparked by the comment and the subsequent expulsion of Dr. Zisiko Nkrumah from the first administration. I haven't seen any documents, but I suppose the government will nevertheless claim that there is a youth policy. Whatever youth policy exists must capture a wider amount of issues as a whole.
So in connection with the theme, how can we deal with the challenge of migration among the youth?
Well, to deal with migration, we have to first address the past part. You know, including employment or job opportunities. We should first address whatever rigidities there are in the educational system that makes the nation or the education system fail overall to equip the youth with the skills they need, you know, to be able to be employed by industry as well as to be able to employ themselves. On the other hand, I think the failure of the country to also expand the productive capacity of the economy, which is what development is all about, is also a very serious shortcoming. You know, so the fact that we have failed to expand the productive capacity of the economy, especially through industrialization, you know, means that we have failed to create more and more employment or job openings to absorb the growing number of the young ones, you know, as the population grows. So that is also one area. But in addition to that, well, if we should put this together, you know, then if we should be able to address the shortcomings or inadequacies of both our education system and the economy, then we would give the youth some hope, you know, that yes, there are prospects for good quality of life in our country, and therefore we will minimize as much we can, you know, to make it somewhat, do I say, irrelevant or unimportant, those push factors. But above the all, the youth also expect, you know, want to see that at the end of it all, when I went to CC, that there will be a good quality of life for me. And this ties in with issues even relating to aging. Okay? So the sense of desperation, alienation in the system also pushes this. You know, it's also a very important part, and that has to do with social policy. So we need to do things to give the youth a sense of hope, you know, for the future in the country. Then also there's a political bit that I don't know how much civics we do teach now, but we, you know, when we were kids, we had history and civics lessons, and we were taught the qualities of a good citizen. I think they are all there, you know, active citizen, bad citizen, and passive citizen. But what political values we teach our youth is determined by the political culture of the time, okay? How our politicians hold themselves out as models to our youth, whether they tell the truth or they indulge in lies, deception, deceit, propaganda, falsehood, and all those things. And I think these are very important in determining the perception of the youth about their country, you know, how things hold up both for today and for the future. So we need to look at all these things, you know, as a whole. In addition to whatever openings or we might want to open up for the youth in the area of sports, which I heard everything is to talk about, there is also, quite critically, you know, the need to do what we need to do to develop the talents and the gifts of the youth so that they grow up to be engineers who invent and who innovate, you know, and not only employ themselves, but employ others. This is what makes countries prosper, and this is what makes the youth of every country stay in the country and develop the country. We are unable to put together what coherent and effective policies. What will ultimately happen is that we continue to use the youth, which is the cream of our society, and that will undermine the overall development efforts of the country. Indeed, it will lead to whatever we call underdevelopment as a process.
Doctor, many thanks for your time with us tonight.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Dr. Theo Richardson is an economist and social policy analyst, and Emmanuel Latifa is a national youth organizer of the NPP, and he's joined the discussions. Good evening, Emmanuel, and you're welcome.
Good evening, my sister.
Well, you lead the youth wing of the NPP, and as you know, some of your youth groups have been vociferous in their communications on air lately. What are you doing to disengage them from those untoward acts?
Concerning words, I don't know if you can update me.
We are talking about World Youth Day today.
Yes.
So what are you doing as a youth to disengage?
Very well, I think it's a day set aside to consider youth development, security, empowerment, welfare, and integration in governance. And for me, I think it's so refreshing. It's such a day set aside to help us take a retrospective view about all what the youth, the challenges we are facing, and progressively what is at stake for us. And for me, I think it's a very good day. It's a very good platform for the youth to come out boldly to also stress and honor the talents in them. But the theme for this year's celebration, talk about the youth migration forward and for the development. I think it's so instructive and so exciting. Looking at the problems the youth are facing in Ghana, largely about youth unemployment. Many of them take the challenge to travel far and near to also go seek for greener pastures. And that is, most of them go through turbulent time. They take the risks and they don't survive it. These are things that we are the youth are going through. And especially in Ghana, for me, I'm so shocked because we had a National Youth Day which was not celebrated. There was no engagement between us and anybody. We have a National Youth Authority it's not connected. Doesn't have any rapport with the youth of this country. And these are things that, if you have a National Youth Policy, what is in the policy? Does the policy speak for us? Does the policy take care of our problems, our frustration, our needs and aspiration as a youth? And then, for me, the that the youth interests are taken care of. And that's why we find ourselves. Many things affect us. There's very segmented youth in this country. Talk about the informal sector youth. Talk about the students. Talk about the formal sector youth. What do you see? We are confronted with problems. And many other things, the few other venues, agencies that are left for us, like GIDA and many other places, are also suffering setbacks. Financial malfeasance and many other managerial administrative, and then it's not helping us. And that is where I think that we need to probably around this time reflect on some of these things, and government must be bold in making sure that they take care of the youth. So it should be a lip service. And the day the government called the youth together and said they are dialoguing, engaging them for what? We need to take a pragmatic step. Government must be more committed and making sure that our needs and aspirations are taken care of, in making sure that the youth are protected, in making sure that there are avenues for us, employment avenues, in making sure that the educational sector is also the youth. Because we are having deficits this year. I mean, all of us are aware, the two streams and what is happening on our various campuses. Cost shifting on our students who are already having a hit with the event. Parents and many stakeholders are complaining, but nobody is coming to their aid. These are the problems the youth find themselves. We, as NPP youth, we took a lot of the day, and I think where we humbly met in our office, secretariat, and we went through most of our programs, assess ourselves, and see whether we have done well, and where we fall short and all. And I think that is a very good day. I salute the youth, those identifiable youth in this country, the Christian youth groups, the Muslim youth groups. Many political youth groups are not too much connected, and it's a time that you have to look at. When you talk about the youth, you tend to look at the political youth. But these are the zero segmented youth that my government must also take good care of them and look at their needs and aspirations.
Mm. Well, but Ima, as a youth organizer, how often do you talk to your people to make sure they channel their energies towards our productive ventures?
Very often. We have many programs that line up. We have our various regional youth organizers, well-positioned, constituency youth organizers, and the police station youth organizers. All of them are working towards our youth development. All of them are working towards programs to make sure that the youth are equipped and empowered. And we don't do only politics. We also make sure that our people find avenues, find places to make sure they also move on progressively in life. And we do all these things. We do all these things. But, it's government that has the mandate. Ghana runs an executive presidency. President promised us that he's a young man, he's a youthful person, he's coming for us, and you don't see anything. You are in a state of hopelessness, you are so disappointed, and we are doing a lot, but we are at our own level. But we need more. The government must come to our aid, because we are hardly hit to the night. The government must come to our aid, making sure that our needs and aspirations are taken care of. And that is not where we're trying to get now, my sister.
Iman, I want to thank you for your time with us, sir.
Thank you. I'm very grateful.
Emmanuel Atifai, the National Youth Organizer of the NPP. It's behind the news. Let's read some of your text messages. And Marlon Ridwan says, political parties should desist from rallying behind their members, especially when they flout the law. And Patrick Segmefri and Dansman says the youth must channel their energies in developing the nation and not to dubiously support politicians. And Dan K. Spencer says instead of the NPP condemning their general secretary for his utterances, they rather petition the court. Many thanks for your text messages. And this is where we wrap up for tonight's edition of the program. Isaac Iyawedu controlled the sounds. And my producers were Christopher Siedu, Edmund Tete, John Toby and Celestine Avi. Ibrahim Kwarteng was my summarizer. My name is Agatha Samoa, and many thanks for staying tuned.